Welcome to Cannon Fodder. Boom! There's the boom.
Yeah.
I'm Mike A. Race with Brian Hedger, the Dispatch's fine hockey writer. Patrick Flaherty is at the controls per usual, our producer. Today is Friday, the 9th of April, 2021. There's about a month left in the season, Brian.
Yep.
The Blue Jackets are in seventh place with 14 games to go. They're 7 points behind fourth place Nashville, which is suddenly a player. Really, it's 8 points because the Blue Jackets don't have tiebreakers. They have to jump Dallas, Chicago, and Nashville to get to fourth. Dallas has 4 games in hand, and the Blue Jackets are minus 31 on the season. This basically is another way of saying that they're out of it, and they are now sellers at the trade deadline, Brian.
Yeah, you know, I felt like after they won on Tuesday against the Tampa Bay Lightning that there might be a shred of, you know, what does Jarmo Kekalainen do at the deadline? And he left absolutely no doubt about what he was going to do. You know, by scratching David Savard yesterday before that game, that basically signaled the end of the Blue Jackets' attempts to get into the playoffs. They feel like they can't get there. And,
They are ahead. I just jump in here and say they have lost 8 of 10, the most recent loss coming last night in the Nationwide Arena against the aforementioned Tampa Bay Lightning. Their third line shredded the Jackets in what was a 6-4 loss for the home team in the Nationwide Arena. They have one more game prior to the deadline. They've got Chicago at home tomorrow, Saturday night. The deadline is Monday at 3 p.m., David Savard sat out last night, which is basically running a flag up the pole.
Yeah, I mean it's running the white flag up, and you know they have lost 8 of 10, like you said, but you know that eighth one was last night after they didn't have Boone Jenner, didn't have Riley Nash, both injured, both out for the rest of the season, didn't have David Savard, as you just mentioned, who was scratched. So, you know, you roll it back to Tuesday, and before we knew that, you know, Jenner was, you know, injured so badly, and, you know, they're in that game, and they win that game. So they had been on a losing bender for sure, but when you looked at the standings, nobody was really running away with it either, you know, and so it didn't look likely. But then you find out the news on Boone, and you find out the news on Nash, and there goes two top guys at winning faceoffs. Didn't have many of them to begin with anyway. And those were the top two, and now they're gone for the season. So I think the injuries compounded with the poor, inconsistent play, the terrible road trip, all that stuff. I think Jarmo just looked at the whole thing and said, look, we just got to scrap this thing and, you know, get what we can get for the assets that we have. And I think that's what you're going to see this weekend. And away we go.
This is nothing that folks didn't see coming. On this program, we've gone over chapter and verse, statistically and otherwise, about describing the weaknesses of this team. And here they are. They've been like a bottom third team for most of the season. And here they are now. And the time has come to leverage assets at the trade deadline, Savard being a primary asset to leverage. I hate to put it like that so coldly because he's been, you know, a horse for this team for years. He's probably one of the three or four best defensemen to ever play in Columbus. That said, he's got an expiring contract, and the thing to do now is to try to extract some value in the rental market. And speaking of that, with Matthias Ekholm probably off the board in Nashville, given their recent hot streak, because they had everyone up for sale earlier this year. But I don't think they're selling now. The Blue Jackets certainly are. And with Ekholm out of play, David Savard probably becomes, I would say definitely is, not only the most sought-after defenseman on the rental market Monday, but maybe the most sought-after player in the league. There's a lot of teams that would love to stick him on their second or third pair and have him as a shutdown guy as they make their playoff runs, their runs toward the Stanley Cup. He's a valuable guy. We'll see what they can get for him. There should be a market. Hedge, what do you think of the market for David Savard?
They're going to get something good for him, for sure. And, I mean, I did some checking around yesterday as well, talked to a front office executive of a team that is a playoff team and basically ran some of that stuff by him. I mean, here's basically what I ran by him. You know, David Savard has done a ton for the Blue Jackets, as you mentioned, in his career, and he has really built up quite a career resume. That's what's gonna get the return value, because this season, and I hate to say this because I respect that guy immensely. I mean, as far as a player, I mean, he's taken so many big shots. You and I have seen it. But he's been bad this year. He's just not been a very good player. He has struggled in his own zone. He has turned the puck over. He has screened his own goalie. I mean, it's been one thing after another. Late to plays, late on coverages, all kinds of bad stuff. But this is a league where you have a bunch of GMs who are looking at the bigger picture, and they're looking at what he has done in the playoffs before. They're looking at like, you know, what has been clearly a tumultuous season in Columbus, you know, that may have affected him as well.
I think it did. With the Dubois situation, that impacted him.
I think you want to also add on top of that, Palmieri went to the Islanders, and you know, he was maybe the top forward that people would see. But again, look at that. You know, Palmieri was playing like third line, fourth line. These aren't big time Patrick Laine, Dubois, you know, wow, get, you know, Taylor Hall even, or anything like that at the deadline names. And so that tells you about the market. You know, and that's what this executive told me. He basically said, because I brought up all this stuff about Savard struggling, and he basically said, it tells me that it's a really, really weak trade market. It's a really bad market when those are your best players. And because it's a weak trade market as far as the talent that's out there, there's still a number of teams that want to add, you know, going into the playoffs. They want to add something valuable to their team in the playoffs. And David Savard is a valuable asset because of all he's done. And, if he plays like he did before, boy, it'd be nice to add that to your defensive lineup in the playoffs, you know. So that I kind of broached it and said, hey, do you think he could even get a late first round pick for him? And he said it's not out of the question. So it would be interesting if they can get a first-round pick for David Savard.
Well, we'll see how Jarmo plays this, the general manager, Jarmo Kekalainen, because does he jump at the first good offer, or does he let the market percolate and get hot just prior to the 3 p.m. deadline on Monday? I don't know. There was some talk about this being a depressed market because of the circumstances. Why go out and get a player for 15 games and add to your cap, even if it's just for those 15 games, when maybe the return's an extra playoff round when there's not much financial incentive, given the fact that the crowds aren't depressed. Blue Jackets crowds are depressed, but the crowds are there's amid the pandemic. There's you're not getting the gate that you might have in the playoffs that you would have in the playoffs in other years and so on and so on, flat cap, so forth.
No, but if you win the cup, you got plenty of marketing dollars that are going to be coming in.
That's where I'm going with this. There's a lot of teams that think they can win the cup, and you know, there's six or seven hard buyers in this market. And almost all of them are looking to add David Savard. And if they're not looking to add him, you know, Nick Foligno's another guy, and we have to talk about the specifics of his situation, Brian. But with Palmieri off the board, he and Travis Zajac traded Wednesday from New Jersey to the island. Lou Lamoriello, once again, is not messing around. Those are very valuable players. I know Zajac's 35 years old, but Palmieri's 30, and he's a Foligno kind of guy. And that's what teams are looking for this time of year, specifically with forwards. If you can't get Matt Duchene, number one center, say, if you want to call him a number one center, he's had a tough couple of years in Nashville. But if you can't get that higher echelon player, These are the guys that have a lot of value at this time of year on the rental market. A guy like Palmieri, a guy like Foligno, very versatile wingers, veterans, strong character guys who've been through playoff wars before. And that is why Savard is not only highly valued because his shutdown defenseman resume, as you said, his CV is quite long, but Foligno as well. He might be one of the three top forwards that teams are pitching for heading into the deadline, maybe two. And again, with six or seven hard buyers, there'll be a hot market for him. The question is, Brian, does he get traded?
I think it's going to be up to Nick Foligno to decide.
Exactly.
That's why I feel like, you know, it's interesting with his trade value. The same source that I talked to about Savard, I talked to about Foligno as well. And that front office, the exec, basically said that Foligno for him was ahead of Savard as far as trade value. But in general, most GMs are going to put Savard ahead because he's a defenseman. And defensemen are so valuable in the playoffs, especially guys who are going to soak up shots. But when you look at Foligno, he's another guy who is going to block shots for you. He plays on the penalty kill, you know, and he plays really well in the penalty kill. And he's also highly, highly motivated to try and get and win a Stanley Cup in his career. There is nothing else that drives that guy more than that silver chalice. You know, he wants his name on that thing, and you can't blame him. And I think that that's what it's going to come down to. I think that, you know, there's going to be plenty of interest in a Nick Foligno. It's going to come down to whether he wants to go. And I think that Yarmo will probably check with him. I mean,
I've confirmed that,
yeah.
It's been reported as well. And I circled back just to check on it with my sources. And yeah, they would never take a guy like Foligno, call him up and say, you've been traded to Minnesota or wherever. That would be a, hey, Nick, here are the offers we have. Is there a place you want to go? Or do you want to stay here and play out your contract? He deserves that deference given his place in the history of this franchise.
Yep. Well, and, you know, you also with a guy like that, if you're trading for him, it's not very often that you're at the deadline, you are adding a captain of another team. And I realize that, you know, let's just face facts. Nick Foligno's offensive numbers have dropped every year, basically. And he would like to have them better. And he's struggling to put the puck in the net as far as finishing. But you want to add a guy to really help your playoff effort for your third or fourth line, a really good forechecker. You know, on the ice, he brings a lot, but also he's going to add to your locker room as well. Because like I said, he's motivated, he wants to win that cup, and he's coming from a locker room where he was the heart and soul. He was the pulse, the heartbeat of that locker room. He is, I should say, until he's dealt. But I feel like he's the one that really, him and that core group, but led by him, they're the ones that had, like, these past three or four years when things could have just really slid off the rails a few times. He's the guy that stops the slide and says, no, that's not going to happen. We're going to fight and keeps them going. So right. That's a heck of a guy to add to a team if you're trading for him.
Well, you know, I'm looking at my lists. I did a little research. You can check out dispatch.com. I described the Savard and Foligno situations in a column I wrote for Friday's editions. It's posted at dispatch.com. All of Brian's work is there. Bill Ravinowitz was pitching in last night as Brian took a couple days off after coming off the road. In any case, Hedge, you know, who would you rather have if you're a team with aspirations and you're a player at the deadline, you're a buyer, Taylor Hall or Nick Foligno?
Well, most people are going to say Taylor Hall because he's got so much offensive ability. But wait, I don't know. I think it depends on what you need, I guess. If you're a playoff team, that means most playoff teams have enough offense right now. You know, like what you really want are those really gritty kind of guys who are going to grind it out in the playoffs for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've seen how valuable, I mean, it was, last year, what did Tampa Bay add at the deadline, Brian?
Well, right. They added Blake Coleman. They added
Goodrow.
Barclay Goodrow, the human law firm. Both those guys ended up turning their third line into a really not just effective, but a dominant kind of line in the playoffs that the Blue Jackets still can't handle with Yanni Gourde.
Right. But that my point was those guys put him over the top. Nick Foligno's another guy that could potentially put a team that aspires over the top. And I'll tell you, those are the top two forwards by my list. You never know what sort of needs teams are looking, what kind of holes they're looking to fill. But really, if you think you can win a cup, you're looking at Taylor Hall or Nick Foligno, and then there's then you're going younger, and maybe less character and so forth.
Wouldn't it be something if Nick Foligno ends up on the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Well, we'll see. I kind of thumbnailed the firm buyers in the market. You know, Toronto would love to have Nick Foligno. Winnipeg would love to have David Savard. The Islanders went out and got Palmieri, and that filled their need, and Zajac. Carolina would love to have a right shot defenseman like David Savard. Colorado's looking for a goalie, but with former assistant general manager of the Blue Jackets, Chris McFarland, now at Joe Sakic's right hand, he knows all about this team, and a place not out of the question for either Foligno or Savard or one of their goalies. And I don't think they'll move one of their goalies yet, just because of for protection reasons. In the expansion draft, they don't have to protect Elvis Merzlikins, and they can protect one goalie. They'll protect Korpisalo. I don't know how deep it is, but I don't think they have to move a goalie right now, Brian.
I think they would have to be bowled over. You know, I'm sure that Yarmouth would think about it if somebody came to him with just a ridiculous offer. You know, said like, hey, you know, blah blah blah, we really need a goalie. We're going to open the vault for you. Then I think maybe they might do that, but you're right. I think mostly the most likely scenario is if they move one, it's going to be in the off season.
Well, getting back to the buyers, Aaron Ekblad, season ending injury in Florida. I don't know if they have enough to get Savard in terms of cap space and return. But Bill Zito is sitting there as general manager, former assistant general manager to Blue Jackets. They'd love to have Savard. No question. I mean, Edmonton's looking for a D. Montreal would love to have a guy like Foligno. He's the kind of guy they're pitching for. Pittsburgh, although I don't know if the Blue Jackets are dealing. It's another question here about dealing. Do you deal with Carolina or Pittsburgh heading back to the Metro next year? It's a fair question. Like, you don't want to. Washington, for instance, needs a goalie.
Who?
Washington needs a goalie, and they are number one in terms of teams pitching for a goalie at the deadline. Would you trade a goalie you're going to see in your building for years on end?
No way. I just had that conversation last night with Steve Wino, who covers the Capitals for AP out there. He was kind of kicking the tires on that on a trade like that with me, what I thought, and I said no way. There's no way. Like, maybe. I mean, I'm not Yarmo, but they would shock. It would absolutely shock me if they move one of these two young stud goalies to a team that's going to be in their own division. I mean, no way. There's no way that's happening.
Well, I'll continue with the buyers, but probably more softer buyers like Washington and Tampa Bay would love to add a defenseman. Boston's looking for a guy like Foligno and or a guy like Savard, and Vegas is looking for a center. And of course, Foligno's not exactly a center, but you can plug him in anywhere, which is part of his value. We'll see what he does, Brian. I mean, this is one of the most important players in the history of the franchise, Nick Foligno. I suspect, as you already kind of mentioned, that if it's the right team in the right situation with a chance to win the cup, maybe he goes. Minnesota, maybe that's a landing spot where his brother plays. We'll see how this goes. I was surprised he wasn't scratched last night, but there's probably a reason for that, isn't there, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, he's approaching his, what is it, 600th game as a Blue Jacket?
Yeah, I think that would be Saturday against Chicago, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a risk because anytime you take the ice, you know, as an NHL hockey player, it's a risk that you're going to – look what happened to Boone Jenner, you know, just friendly fire breaks his fingers out for the season. So I'm sure it's not – you know, it's – if you're Yarmo, you're probably sweating bullets there because you want to get something for him if possible. But at the same time, like we said earlier, it's going to be up to Nick Foligno probably for the most part, you know, if he wants to get moved or not. And so I think you just let him make the call. And if he wants to play, I mean, that would be a special thing to play your 600th game as a Blue Jacket. He means so much to this community and he has meant so much to this organization. He was there right from the start, him and Bob. And Doobie and all those other guys were there right from the start of this thing turning around and eventually becoming four straight playoff appearances until this season. So I think that would be important to get his 600.
You know, I touched on this in my column, but it's a sad thing. I mean, we're almost blithely talking about trading these guys at the deadline, and they're almost assuredly – well, Savard is definite, but – you know, here's Foligno, and, you know, I just checked it. Yeah, last night was his 599th game for the Blue Jackets, and Saturday, if he plays, and I expect he will if he played last night, will be a 600. I mean, Nick Foligno is you know, when you think of a Blue Jacket, he might be the, you know, he's the poster boy. I mean, he's been, so an era is about to come to an end. We're going to talk about, in future episodes, you know, we'll get to it as we head on down the stretch of the season here and into the off season. But what the plan is going forward, you know, about whether this is a tear down, rebuild, or more of a retooling. I expect Yarmo thinks it's more of a retooling, and his job is going to ride on that read there for sure. Of course, we're going to get to it down the road too, Brian, but the future of this coaching staff. I thought it was interesting last night, and we should wrap with this, is John Tortorella's post game. He really backed off the gas pedal. He wouldn't criticize his team. It seemed pretty clear, Brian, and I want your take on this before we sign out. It seemed very clear that he's trying to maintain a certain atmosphere, environment, as they head into a new phase of their season.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. I feel like, I mean, let's just face facts here, right? He knows he doesn't have a contract extension beyond this season. Everybody knows that. And he could have been fired earlier this season, probably. A lot of people were calling for his head. Didn't happen. There's a reason for that. I mean, he is a very key, important figure in the history of this, the young history, I should still say, even though it's 20 years, still very young history of this franchise. And when you think about it, what's he been here, 5 years, 6 years? That's a quarter of the franchise's history has been coached by John Tortorella, and it's been the best quarter of their history by far. It's not even close. He's gotten them to the playoffs four straight years. They won a playoff series that nobody expected them to win, mainly because he fired them up so much and got them to play the way that they needed to play that series. So I think that if the Tortorella era is coming to an end, and that's what everyone seems to feel is happening here, if that's the case, you don't want him going out being fired or having some crazy tirade or whatever. You know what I mean? The guy has done a lot of really good things here, and I think he deserves to go out on his terms, and so do the Blue Jackets. I think nobody needs to have some kind of lasting meltdown moment with Torts, you know. Right. Like it should be a classy thing, and I think that's what they're trying to do right now.
Yeah, you don't want it to be a gong show either, with guys just running around. And as he said, you know, there are guys playing for their jobs. There's a lot of young players that have to showcase themselves. So I think maintaining a proper atmosphere is what he's doing. Go ahead.
Yeah. I sort of break up, but that is an interesting thing especially when we talk, if we're going to talk about torts, is that I think he needs to be. I mean, a lot of, God, people are just banging on this guy, and I get it. I understand why they feel like he's a bad fit for this guy or that guy, and he drove this guy out of town or all that stuff. But if you listen to what he is saying to this day, I mean, this is a guy who probably can read the tea leaves like anybody else.
I think he knew before the season. Yeah,
sure. And this whole season, he has still said, I am a coach who's he's basically said, I need to do what's best for the future of the franchise and try and get some of these young guys, because the young guys are the future of this franchise, like it or not, you know, Bemstroms and all those kind of guys. So he's tried to strike that back. It could have been very easily. He could have just said, I'm playing Grigorenko. I'm playing all these other guys, and I'm going to try and win. And that didn't happen. You know, now Grigorenko wasn't lighting the world on fire, but he could have been playing that guy who was more of a veteran than some of these younger guys, because he wants to try to the very end. He's trying to help this franchise, and I think that needs to be commended.
Yeah, people can say whatever they want about Torchwood. He's a great coach. His record describes that, and he's a professional. And. And oh, by the way, he's only one of the most important figures in the history of the franchise. He's done great things in this town, things that nobody else has been able to accomplish behind the bench, that's for sure. Now, lastly, Hedge, this will be Yarmo's ninth trade deadline by my count. That's a team record for GMs, if you want to call it that. Started off with a bang in 2013 when they, you know, they had that, when they were in that run where they were blowing themselves out of the lottery. That was the Gavrik deal, which didn't work out. We know he can be bold. You know, the next deadline, he moved Gavrik for Matt Fratton, something that you hear young people still talk about, Matt Fratton for Marion Gavrik. In any case, he was selling in 2014. In 15, that was he got William Karlsson. That was the James Wisniewski deal. In 16, not a deadline deal, but it was in January, the first week of January. That was the Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson trade, which massive. Was the
massive deal.
Yeah, it was a massive deal, and that sort of kicked off. The trade season that year, 2017, that was when he was plugging holes. That was the Kyle Quincy trade for Dalton Prout, and not much there in 17. 18, he went back. He reacquired the test too.
Wait a minute. 2017 in the offseason was Panarin.
Right. But I'm talking about trade deadline specifically.
Oh, I got you.
Specifically. You know, I'm sorry.
It's funny, Quincy. I'm glad you mentioned Quincy. You know, Kyle Quincy at one point moved from Colorado to Detroit for a first round pick, a late first round pick, and it was a terrible trade. Actually, you know who orchestrated that deal? Ken Holland, who is now the GM looking for a defenseman for the Edmonton Oilers. So that might be one of your sources for a first round pick potentially. Who knows?
Well, I think Savard can fetch a first round pick.
I think so too. In this market, I really do.
He's at the top of the market. 2018, continuing with the Jarmo Kekalainen deadline history, that was Mark Letestu from Nashville, and Ian Cole, who was an important player, and Thomas Vanek, and of course, Ian Cole was a horse. It's a shame they didn't re-sign him. It came down to like $500,000 a year, and he went off to Colorado. He's since been traded again.
Minnesota now.
Yeah. 2019, that was the all-in year, for good or for ill. That'll be debated for all time here in Columbus. Matt Duchene for two firsts. With Vitaly Abramov and Jonathan Davidson.
For Panarin at the deadline.
What's that?
So the debate is always going to be, what could they have gotten for Panarin, who everybody knew was gone, you know, afterward, like, and he was going to do his own thing. What could they have gotten for Panarin at the deadline?
Right.
If they had sold, what could they have gotten? would have been a first round pick, and what, and then you have to look at the next draft and say where was that pick and who was available.
Well, they've screwed up a lot of drafts by not tanking, and that's a whole 15 to 50 other columns I've written over the years. But that said, I still feel, I think a lot of that's hindsight. I still feel like in the moment, and that with that playoff victory, granted, you wish they got through Boston as well and on to the conference final. But that said, that was very gutsy. It was highly aspirational, and it did set the city on fire.
Absolutely. I would agree with you. I think it was the right move. I think he made the right move there, given the circumstances. The only thing that you can kind of look back at that situation and kind of wince a little bit is when he announced that, you know, all these deals that, you know, on deadline day and had his press conference, he immediately talked about three guys, Texier, Bemstrom, and Foodie, and how important they were and how they're like everybody in the league wanted those guys and they were going to be the future and this and that. And I get it. They're all still very young, and it's too soon to say, so, well, you overrated those guys, but it hasn't happened yet. And in a league that where young guys, you know, pretty quick, usually if you got an impact guy there.
Because young guys playing out. Yes. And that is another thing, among many others that came out of that trade deadline in 2019, has the general manager overrated his players? You know, it's funny, his young players that he's drafted. You know, a year before that deadline, the training camp prior to that deadline, they were talking up Jonathan Davidson like he was going to be their right. third line center, and then they threw him in the Duchesne deal with Ottawa, and they said, well, he was never one of our top prospects. So those ratings get those goalposts get moved around a little bit as the situation requires. Of course, that same year, so. Two firsts gone there, and then two seconds, and Anthony DeClaire gone, and the Ryan DeZingle deal. Keith Kincaid and Adam McQuaid, who could have helped them a great deal, but alas, the concussions got them there. That's too bad. You know, it could have worked out that they, if all things, you know, fell into place. You see him destroy Tampa Bay in the first round of the playoffs. And you start to think about, well, what if DeZingle could have kicked in something somewhere and Adam McQuaid was healthy? And if McQuaid's healthy, do they get through Boston? There's a lot of what ifs there, Hedge. And of course, last year, 2020 deadline, he'd already leveraged in his previous deadline. He'd already used all his bullets. And he had nothing to do. Because he had nothing to give up to help a team that had played their guts out all year, and I think last year's trade deadline, Brian, as I look back at it again, the gift of hindsight, when you go out for a team that worked that hard to get in the playoffs and worked that hard to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs in the bubble, and at the deadline on February 20th, this is prior to the COVID, about just a few weeks before. Yeah. All you get is Devin Shore. And that team, that was a locker room. You wanted to say, okay, guys, here's some help. And he couldn't do it because he had no picks left to get help. He had nothing to buy with. He had no money, so to speak. I think that's the beginning.
Milano.
Yeah, that was Sonny Milano for Devin Shore. A deal with Anaheim. That was their deadline deal last February.
Of course, Marcus didn't work out.
Yeah, I think, Hedge, you know, you look back on it, and that's sort of the beginning of the end of the Tortorella era. I think the locker room needed a boost there. God, they were so injured last year. They played so hard. Yeah. And I think you saw the absolute best they could be in the bubble, which was going to fall short against Tampa Bay, which was on its way to winning the Stanley Cup. And coming out of that, I think you probably had to take a hard look at the organization and say, how much more can they get out of this group, you know, without greater help, of course. And then goodbye, Josh Anderson and Pierre-Luc Dubois, and you're talking about a real cultural change in terms of how the team plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're really pointing back to is not necessarily last year, to me, not necessarily last year's trade deadline, but the one before that we mentioned with where they bought, because what happens after that, after they make that great run to the second round and almost get by Boston, everybody leaves. You know, like Panarin is the main one, obviously. You know, they were going to let Bob go. They had all these goalies. That was just going to happen. They weren't going to, like, you know, sign Bob and then sit on these goalies forever. So that was going to happen. DeZingle, he wasn't a cultural fit here at all. Didn't really produce on the ice. And then what was the other one? Duclair was gone. And Duchesne. Duchesne was going to Nashville. So the one that it really comes down to, the one that they really wanted, the one that they threw just scads of money at the last second to try and get him to stay, was Artemi Panarin, because he was a playmaker. He was the guy that, like, he basically was the straw that stirred the drink for the Blue Jackets. And when you lose him, I feel like it was they had enough left to mitigate. Like, they weren't going to fall off a cliff. Because they went into last year and they were all fired up and angry about everyone just writing them off and all this stuff. So they had a lot of motivation, but I feel like it was just kind of like a slow decline off. Instead of falling off the cliff, he kind of rolled down it, you know, however many hundreds of feet down. And now you're getting toward the bottom of the canyon and this team is beat up. That's kind of what it's like right now.
So, yeah, that deadline will be debated for the rest of our lifetimes, at least. That was a mortgaging in the future to take a shot. All the chips in the middle shot at the Stanley Cup. It did get him a 4-game sweep over Tampa Bay, and in a sense, they're still paying for that now. Was it worth it? The debate will rage forever, and that will, you know, I guess that takes us to the end of this, where we started. In a fashion, and that is that when you have a guy like Panarin who is going to leave in free agency, you have to salvage something for him. And so they are doing now with David Savard and Nick Foligno as they start what will either be a ground-up rebuild or some kind of retooling that'll become clearer as we go forward. Brian, anything else to add before we sign off here on this very wordy show?
Just really quickly, I'm not so sure that those are the only two names that might get moved. You know, I mean, you have another guy in Michael Delzato, who I feel has played very well this year. I think he's proven that he is an NHL player. He's only 30 years old. He's on nothing contract. He's a pending UFA. I bet you he could get you something that they would be useful in the draft or something like that.
He's certain to be moved as well. There's no question about it. And they would have moved Riley Nash as well, but he got hurt and he's done for the season. So, you know, they're win a seventh round pick probably with that entry.
Honestly, no. You know what? With Riley Nash, he's a guy that I think is sneaky good as far as the same reasons that we talked about with David Savard. This guy wins faceoffs, you know, here and there, and enough to where you're like, okay, that guy could be on my fourth line. And then when he's not playing center and he's playing right wing, when he plays in the playoffs, his game goes up a level. And I think a lot of scouts saw that. So you probably could have gotten a fourth, maybe, you know, fourth, fifth. And those are not invaluable picks with a scouting staff like this.
No, especially you've been trying to scrabble together picks since 2019, since the 2019 deadline. That's it. So, yeah, it's going to be a busy deadline. You can almost guarantee it's going to be a busy trade deadline here. We'll see if anything starts bubbling this weekend. Brian is rested and refreshed. He'll be back on the job. And tracking this stuff. We'll all have our eye on it. So let's end on that note. For Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, and Brian Hedger, our terrific Blue Jackets beat writer, I'm Mike Arace. Thanks for joining us, and we'll get back to you post-deadline. Patrick, blow us out of here.